Would you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm John Gelman, and I'm president of Hawaii Marine Animal Response.
How many people do you have working with you?
We've got six staff members and about 110 volunteers. Rocky and Kaimana was a worldwide sensation. As you know, what we now know as Kaimana was born late in June, right on Kaimana Beach in Waikiki, to a mom named Rocky. And it was never expected that it would occur. She has normally gone to Kauai to have her pups. But this year, she decided to have her pup right there. So it was kind of a first-time event for most people, and it really focused our attention and focused our resources to do a very difficult job in a very complex environment.
Hmm. You know, that you're modest there. Having been there several times, I'm just trying to think. There's Rocky lying on the beach with a tiny thing that looks like a rolled-up towel. Your job was to what?
Our job was really multifaceted. So everything from ensuring the public is aware that there's animals there in the first place to try to minimize any kind of human interaction with the pup or the mom because, as many people learned from talking to our volunteers, when there is a mom with a pup, that mom is very defensive, just as a bear would be with a cub. So part of our role there was to try to minimize any activity in the water that would perhaps result in some kind of a negative interaction, either between the pup and the human or between the mom and the human.
What do you think was going through Rocky's head? Why would she have her pup there?
Really, nobody can really speculate. She is regularly seen in Waikiki, so she's very comfortable there on those beaches. So it could be that she just ran out of time, that she didn't make it in time. And so she decided to have her pup where she is comfortable to be. She's very comfortable there.
Mm-hmm. PO3 turned out to be Kaimana. So cute. Did it seem like her childhood was normal? Did she, you know?
It was. I think normal from a biological standpoint. I mean, I've seen several pups in that stage of life and gone through being brought up by mom and being weaned by mom. What made this unusual is that she was right there in the middle of crowds of thousands of people, and that many people got to witness such an unusual event. That's what made it unusual.
How many people do you think saw her?
We estimate that just people on the beach was an average of at least 1,000 to 2,000 people a day.
And she was there how long?
She was there about 46, 47 days. So it was a lot of people. In conjunction with that, there was a webcam put up by Civil Beat in partnership with us. And we know that webcam got over 2 million hits during that 5 to 6 week period. And this is people coming from all over the world checking it out and seeing Kaimana on the beach. But dealing with a mom and the pup on the beach is not entirely unusual. It happens every year for us.
And Rocky would swim down the beach. She'd swim up the beach. She'd you know, hang out over near the Outrigger Canoe Club. She'd move back to Kaimana Beach.
Right. So it was an interesting learning experience for the general public. They could actually witness kind of that evolution of a newborn pup. So in the first few days, they stayed pretty much put where she was born, right there at the end of the beach. And then as she got older and she started to beef up weight and she started to get her muscle tone and she started to learn how to, interact in the water, mom took her out further and further and further. And she actually, before she was weaned, she had gone as far east as almost Diamond Head and as far west as Queens Beach. And so she was already ranging throughout that area. And every time she would leave Kaimana Beach, our volunteers would track with her up and down the beach, ensuring that there was no interaction going on with humans up and down the beach all day long.
And then there was the natatorium.
Then there was the natatorium. the three events, which were heart-stopping for everybody involved. When the first time Kaimana, as she became more familiar with her surroundings, she started exploring the area, and she found her way into the natatorium. And that first time, she was left there alone, and an intervention was needed for her to be removed and brought back to Rocky. Subsequently, there were two other times when she made her way into the natatorium, but in both those cases, Rocky went in with her or after her and helped her come out.
Okay, now, weaning. Was that psychologically damaging at all for Kaimana?
No. I think we as humans, we sometimes want to attach human emotions to it. You know, oh, how sad, you know, mom has left the pup. The pup must be lonely. We need to remember that this is nature. These are wild animals. They've done this for millions of years. This is their way. Monk seals tend to have a very abrupt or what is called a catastrophic weaning, where the mom just leaves. She doesn't dawdle. She doesn't, you know, it doesn't last for a long time.
She doesn't pause at the door and look back at with tears in her eyes. Okay.
I mean, we may want to ascribe human emotion to it, but we don't. There's no thinking that there's really on their part. There's no sense of separation like that.
What about Kaimana then? What did she do? This is what we don't know.
Well, as you know, she was relocated to a remote area on the island, and we went with her, and we have been monitoring her activity and her location ever since. We have volunteers and staff with her as often as she is seen. She has been seen quite frequently in different parts of the island. From where she was initially released, she has been ranging upwards of over 10 miles along the shoreline. We know from her satellite tracking that she's also been ranging miles out to sea. So she's doing what a young seal does. They become familiar with their territory. They begin to forage. They start to explore. And they look for places to find food and rest.
Oh, gosh. This is generally on the North Shore, right?
Yeah, I'd say generally in the northern section of the island.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Do you have pictures?
There are pictures on a variety of Facebook pages of her, not just from us, but from...
I need some pictures, John. You have to send me some pictures.
I'll get you some pictures.
At least five.
Yeah. But she's doing well. Every time we do see her, we take photo documentation shots of her, and we send those in to the researchers, and they continually monitor her appearance and her health. And from everything we're hearing, she's doing great. She's, you know, quite mobile, very adventurous. By comparison, other seals that have been born that I've been familiar with, some have stayed put right where they were weaned for months. And just didn't feel the need to explore or find new territory. Kaimana has been different in the sense that she's been active and moving around, and she's quite independent. She's been seen in the presence of other young seals, adult seals. She's adjusting just fine to her environment.
Wow. Do you feel like you pretty much know all the seals, at least around Oahu?
Yeah, we're very familiar with the seals on Oahu.
And how many are there around here?
It's estimated that in 2016 there were probably around 40 to 45 regular, what I would call regular seals, meaning that the majority of their time is spent on or around Oahu. It's not an exact number because some animals spend their time going between the islands. We know that there are animals, for example, that travel regularly between Kauai and Oahu and between Oahu and Molokai. There's animals that have we've seen on Oahu that have been seen on the Big Island, and vice versa. So, but in terms of regular resident seals, if you will, there's about 40 to 45.
Are they equipped with electronic monitoring devices or what?
No, that's actually quite rare. Most seals, many seals, when they are born, when they're weaned, they are tagged with flipper tags. These are little tags that are about 2 to 3 inches long. And they are attached to the hind flippers of the animals with a unique letter and number combination. And those numbers, those tags stay with the animal as long as possible. Sometimes they fall off as the animal ages. Sometimes they break. And as time goes on, as the animals mature into adulthood, many animals end up with scars that we can track, that we keep a catalog of. So even if an animal isn't necessarily tagged, we can, with a fair amount of accuracy, actually determine which animal it is, which specific unique animal it is, based on sex, location, scars. Sometimes they have natural birthmarks. For example, Rocky on her left fore flipper, her forward left flipper. She has several of her digits are naturally bleached white. So from a distance, you can actually see that most often. And then by determining her sex, and so she has a couple of other scars, and the location, we can usually tell it's Rocky without much difficulty.
How can you tell her sex?
When seals are on their back or on their sides, you can see by you can tell a female from a male quite simply, as long as they don't have sand on their belly, and they always have sand on their belly. So you have to sometimes give them time to shake some of that sand off, or rub some of that sand off, or reposition themselves on the beach so that you can determine the sex.
What are you looking for?
You're looking for a female. You're looking for four nipples that are kind of in a box shape with the navel right in the middle. So like a four with a star. And with a male, you see a penile opening, and sometimes you see a penile, what's called a penile groove. So they're quite different on their belly from each other. So it's pretty simple, again, if as long as you can see those markings, you can tell sex pretty easily.
How many monk seals do you think do hang around here, the Hawaiian Islands?
Well, if you include the northwestern Hawaiian Islands,
okay,
in the entire archipelago is estimated in 2016 for there to be about 1,400 animals left. Mm-hmm. And that's actually up slightly over the last couple of years. There's been a slight increase in their population. In the main Hawaiian Islands, everywhere from Niihau on the north to Big Island on the south, in that set of islands, there's about 300. Mm. So the majority live in the northwesterns. About 20% live in the main Hawaiian Islands.
And they're considered endangered.
Very endangered. In fact, they were critically endangered, designated critically endangered, until a year ago.
Oh. And now they're just endangered.
Yeah, very endangered, though.
Mm-hmm. Anything else I should ask about that, John? I think...
About the endangered status?
No, just about, I guess, the seals, because then we should go on to any other marine whatever that you might have dealt with.
I'd want to remind people about the proper viewing guidelines, and you know, if you see one, what to do, and if you see one, how far to stay away,
okay,
and that kind of thing.
Wait now, okay.
So, we encourage people when they see a seal to always call the hotline, our hotline, which is toll-free, 888-256-9840. That's good 24 hours a day anywhere in Hawaii. And we encourage them to call even if they think that other people know that the seal is there, because every call is important, and if we haven't received a call, it's important to get that call. And if you do see a seal, we encourage you to abide by the proper viewing guidelines. So we ask that you stay... You know, we ask you to stay, you know, at least 50 feet away from the seal, just to give it space and also to prevent any kind of a disturbance. When you do call in, you're going to be asked a series of questions about where you are. So we'd encourage you to give us a good description of your location, what the seal is doing. Is it just lying there? Is it asleep? Is it looking out at the ocean? Is it facing the shore? We're going to ask you a series of questions so that our responder can be better informed to not only find the seal, but what is maybe going on with the seal.
Were there any incidents with Rocky and Waikiki, Rocky and people that interface?
Sure. There were quite a few situations where... there were people that perhaps got a little too close. There weren't any critical violations, if you will, or any critical situations that
injuries.
But it was a constant vigilance. You know, even though we did our best to consistently remind and educate people about the importance of keeping their distance and the importance of Rocky being defensive and protective. There were people that would sometimes push that limit a little too far.
Is childbearing an annual thing for Rocky?
Yeah, she's been pretty consistent over the last decade of giving birth to a pup almost every year.
And what are the odds she'll be back in Waikiki?
It's anybody's guess. She's routinely, again, gone to Kauai to birth.
Where?
To the northern section of the island. But we don't know, you know, what caused her to give birth in Waikiki this year.
But the odds are better that she might be back now that she's been there once, or what?
It's really, you know, unknown. You know, a fair amount of animals do give birth. If I recall, I think the number was about 70% of females, if they do give birth, they give birth the subsequent time on the same island. And of those, about 40% at the same location. So it really depends on the seal. Again, Rocky's been pretty consistent for nearly a decade, going to the same, pretty much the same place every time. There are other seals on Oahu that we know have given birth multiple times, and they've given birth in pretty much the exact same spot, sometimes where they were born. So the mom could return to where she was born to give birth.
What's the survival rate for infant seals?
On Oahu, it's actually quite good. It's about 80%, if I recall, from the last research that was done, which is quite good. Which is part of the reason the population is doing pretty well here. It's not that good in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, but it has improved over the last few years.
Why would it be worse there?
There's more challenges in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. There's been some difficulty in prior years in having sufficient food stocks, so there's been greater competition for food. Some animals have been malnourished. So it's been a greater challenge in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands historically, although it has been better conditions in the last few years.
Oh, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yes, and up there you also have other dangers such as entanglement in fishing equipment. And, you know, it's just a more wild place. Here you have more abundant foraging, more abundant food sources. You have a much larger geographic area for these animals to share the space. So the conditions are actually quite good for monk seals in the main Hawaiian Islands.
Let's move to any other marine animals you might have encountered this past year.
So we've been active with sea turtles as well. So we are NOAA's designated first responders for sea turtles. We average about 8 responses per month, that's been pretty consistent over the last 6 months or so. And they tend to be all over the island. It could be a turtle that's unfortunately deceased. It could be a turtle that is having difficulty because of some kind of a fishery interaction. The difference with turtles is that these animals are generally only reported when they are in difficulty. Whereas with monk seals, they are reported no matter if they're in difficulty or not.
Right.
So there's a lot more calls related to monk seals than there are with turtles.
Yeah, and we see a lot more turtles actually out in the water and so on. How are they doing?
The population, depending on the species, so there are two species we see the most in Hawaii. This is the green turtle, honu, which is threatened. It's on the endangered list, but it's considered threatened. Doing quite well. The population is healthy, slowly growing, about 5% a year. And then you also see, to a much lesser degree, hawksbill turtles, which are endangered. You don't see those very often on Oahu. There's maybe 20 or so that have been spotted around Oahu. The bulk of the hawksbills are seen on the Big Island or South Maui.
How are they identified?
They have several different characteristics from a green sea turtle. So the easiest way is to look at their carapace, their shell. The hawksbill turtle, the edges of the carapace are jagged.
Okay.
Almost like a serrated knife. Mm-hmm. Green turtles are smooth.
Yeah.
They also tend to have on their carapace the shoots that make up the sections of the carapace into one complete body. They are in a green turtle. They neatly meet like a jigsaw puzzle piece. In a hawksbill turtle, they overlap like shingles on a roof.
And the
green turtle tends to be less colorful than the hawksbill as well.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, they tend to be a little smaller too, but you wouldn't know necessarily unless you knew how old they were. If you compared one with the other, the hawksbill would generally be smaller at the same age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gee, that's just so great. Geez, thanks so much, John. Mm-hmm. Can you think of anything else you'd like to add? We're just, this is great.
You know, I think, again, with turtles, I think I want to remind the public that if they observe a turtle that looks like it's either having difficulty or entangled or deceased, to, again, call that hotline number, 888-256-9840, and report it to us so that we can go out and take stock of the situation.
Are there turtle egg nest, you know, nests all over the beach?
There are turtle nests on some beaches.
Which beaches primarily?
We don't disclose where turtles are nesting, just because we don't want their nests to be disturbed. But they tend to be in more remote areas. And they are observed and they are monitored by both volunteers and government officials because they're rare in the main Hawaiian Islands. The bulk of the green sea turtles in Hawaii, over 90% of the green turtles, actually leave the main Hawaiian Islands and go to the French frigate shoals in the northwest Hawaiian Islands to nest. So over 95% to be exact, of the green turtles you see, females, actually migrate over 500 miles every year to have nests and lay their eggs.
Wow.
So it's quite a migration.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very, very, quite a migration.
What would the timing be on that?
Unknown. I mean, it's...
Is there a season?
It tends to be near the end of the year.
For the eggs.
Fall. And then they come back to the main Hawaiian Islands after that.
Uh-huh. You know, for pupping, for seals, is summer the birth season or
it
not?
It can be actually any time of the year.
Oh, okay.
But the bulk of what we see are usually between March and maybe September. Oh. But it could be any time of the year. But for an example, here on Oahu, we had four pups in 2017. The first was born in mid-May. The second was born in late May. And then PO3, Kaimana, was born in late June. And then we had the fourth born in mid-July. So they kind of fell within that March to September time frame.
Hmm. Gee, you'd think there would be a whole lot more being born here, though, considering the number of seals that live or you know, kind of frequent Oahu. I guess they could just be what?
They may not.
Pupping
they
somewhere
may not,
else?
They may not have pups every year.
Oh.
They may skip a year. And they could be having pups in other places. For example, we have a seal that's regularly spotted here on Oahu. It's a frequent visitor to Oahu. We see her all the time. But she has never given birth on Oahu. She always gives birth on Molokai. And similarly, Rocky, historically, has always gone to Kauai. So it could be you have a regular resident on Oahu that goes to some other place to give birth.
Uh-huh. Do you try to get into the minds of these creatures or what, John?
I think it's important for us to be objective and to be it's not helpful to impart emotion. It detracts from our doing our job the best we can is to remain as objective as possible and to try to be somewhat clinical about what we're doing so that we can do the best job we can.
I know. I mean, I just saw your volunteers there just trying to hold all these people back. And we're like,
right.
You know.
That's a regular occurrence. And, you know, we're not trying to minimize that. People, these animals are very charismatic. They're beautiful to look at. So it's very easy to get emotionally involved, emotionally attached. And, you know, if that's what it takes for us to help the species recover, so be it. We'll take a little emotion if that'll help. You know, everybody can do their part to give the animals space, call in to the hotline when they see one, you know, participate as a volunteer. There's many ways we can, each person can play a role in helping the species recover. And people are quite amazed. I mean, the animal is, it's not only beautiful to look at, but when you consider its biology and what it's capable of doing, you know, for example, it can dive to over 1,800 feet in the ocean. That's, you know, think about that, 1,800 feet, and hold its breath for 20 minutes and even take naps underwater. You know, I mean, think about an animal that's diving and then eating and chewing and swallowing while holding its breath. Imagine you trying to be in a, underwater in a pool and taking a bite of a hamburger while you're holding your breath and swallowing it, right? Right, so its animal has been perfectly evolved over millions of years to do what it does, and it does it really well. And but they're wild, and they're out foraging in a wild world, fighting off predators, competing for food. And
how
so
much do they eat every day?
They eat. It's estimated that they eat around 4% of their body weight. So if you're an average adult, that would be about 13 to 15 pounds. So that's not a lot.
It's not
a lot.
That's a lot of fish, well, but, though. No, is it mostly fish?
It's things like they primarily eat animals that we would not normally fish for. So they eat octopus, they eat eel, they eat crab, crustacea, shrimp. They'll eat sea cucumber. They'll eat small fish. But they're not going to go after game fish. So they're not really competing with fishermen. And that's a common misconception. Mm-hmm. People sometimes think that they're competing with shoreline fishermen for the same fish, yeah. And they don't really hunt for or forage game fish because they can't catch them. They're not really. You think about an ulua.
No, right? Yeah, right. You know, that would be too hard.
Right. The seal's not going to spend their time trying to catch an animal like that. They're going to go after a small little fish. Or an octopus, or an eel that's stuck in the rocks, or something that, you know, think they're more like, they're opportunistic eaters. They're like dogs.
But I don't see how it could get an eel. Eels are so fast, and they're so stuck, and seals' faces are so soft and round.
Right. So they one of their tricks, and you can actually observe this, there have been several seals that have been where they've attached a critter cam to their back. So you can actually observe. From their back, you can see them swimming. And one of their common tricks is they use their muzzle. If they sense that an eel or an octopus is in the rocks, they'll use their muzzle to move the rocks or break away the rocks, and then the animal will fly free, and then it'll go out and get it. Sometimes you'll even see that, but again, it's a wild world. So other fish, like little sharks or ulua, they know this technique. So they'll hang around the monk seal while the seal is foraging, hoping that they'll compete.
Once the thing flies free.
Right. So it's a wild world. You know, so they the point being that when you see an animal that is on the beach asleep or trying to sleep, they need their rest. They've been out for who knows how long, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16 to 18 hours foraging to live, and they need their rest. And so if they're not given their rest and they're constantly disturbed, think about a human where you can't recover from your sleep, right? You're sleep deprived. So you're not going to be effective at foraging. You're not going to be effective at reproducing. You're not going to be effective at socializing. Your primary biologic functions are going to be diminished. And that can have a long-term effect on your health and the species. So we really encourage people, you know, they're on the beach sleeping for a reason and respect that. Same thing with turtles. I mean, turtles will sometimes come out to sleep on the beach. And same thing, they're resting. They're warming up. I know they're cute and people want to try to interact with them, but there's kind of an order to what we do. And the very first thing we do is what we call take management of the site, right? So, because you could show up and there's someone on the back of the seal, or you could show up and there's a dog running towards the seal, or you could show up and there's a little kid about ready to stick his hand towards the seal. So the very first thing we do when we arrive is quickly, you know, take an assessment and remove danger. You know, try to keep a dangerous thing from occurring. Once that's happened and you've got some time, then if you need to set up a perimeter, if you need, you know, but the key thing is to try to limit or to try to minimize any kind of inappropriate interaction right away. And then after you've got that under control, then you can take your time, you can assess the animal's condition, and because all these things we do, whether it's removing threat and assessing photo documentation, you know, pup monitoring pups, all these things have a cumulative effect of saving animals. We are saving this species, and we find animals with hooks, we find animals that are entangled, we find animals that have fishing line around their hind flippers, we find animals that look thin, we find animals that have a growth, we find animals that have cuts, we find animals, and we keep that, all that information is critical. Sometimes it could be an innocent thing. For example, we spotted a seal at Kiana Point yesterday that had two fresh bites, and we can tell by the shape of the bite what kind of shark bit it. In this particular case, this is not at all life-threatening because it's what's called a cookie-cutter shark. It's just a circular chunk of skin that came out. But they're fresh wounds, and so we're gonna record it, monitor it, and see how it heals over time, see if they require some kind of intervention.
While the animal's in the wild, right? You
yes.
Can bring it in or anything.
For something like that, the intervention would probably be an antibiotic shot.
Yeah, oh, I see.
But other times it does require intervention and to remove the animal. I mean, just I don't know when it was, a few weeks ago, we had a common visitor to the west side, an animal. His name is Benny. He's a male. People on the west side know him. He's seen all the time, and he showed up with a hook. And this is not his first. I think this is number 6 or 7 for him. And it's almost an annual event. And in both last year and this year, he had to be taken off the beach, and actually surgical work had to be done to remove that hook.
Why didn't he run away from you guys?
Well, so when we find an animal that like that, we observe it. Sometimes we're lucky. The animal is in a place where an intervention can occur. Often it's not a place.
Yeah.
Let's say he's on rocks. It's dangerous to try to intervene with an animal on rocks, not only for the animal, but for humans. But in this case, he was on the beach at White Plains. He was spotted with a hook, but there wasn't enough time to really do anything. So we went back in the water, and then we found him a couple days later, again, luckily on sand. And we assisted Noah to come out with a vet, and we were able to determine by looking at the animal closely that the hook was just inside its mouth versus in its lip or down its throat. And then based on that, an intervention was attempted on the beach. But they weren't able to actually get the hook, so they had to sedate him, put him in a cage, and take him down to Fort Island.
Oh my God!
And then you can remove the hook. Last year, similar situation. We spotted him with fishing line around him, and we could determine by looking at more closely that the hook was not in his lip and not in his mouth.
Oh no!
Which means it was in his stomach. So the vet came out and actually sedated him. And they have a portable X-ray machine. So while he's lying on the beach, they can actually X-ray him. And they could actually see the hook in his stomach. So they had to bring him in, actually cut him into his stomach and take this hook out. And he recovered well. Like I said, this is number 6 or 7 for him. But these are the kinds of things that are important, because if you, you know, there's so few animals, losing one animal is important, because they're, if they die, they're out of the breeding stock. If it's a female, you're not only losing that animal, you're losing all the downstream animals that she could have. So if you lose a young female, for example, to disease or a hooking or an entanglement, you could be losing 8-10 animals. I mean, Kaimano's Rocky's 10th pup, and she's probably not done yet. She may have another 2-3.
How much time do seals spend on land?
About a third of the time.
Oh.
Yeah, so when you see a seal, and that's just average, right?
Yeah, yeah.
About a third of their time is spent on shore, about two-thirds in the water. And the bulk of their time on shore is resting, except when they're pupping. You know, that's more of a constant thing for 5 weeks. But they, and some are very regular. Some are more nocturnal, right? You'll see them during the day, but you won't see them at night. Some are more daytime feeders, so you'll see them at night, and you won't see them during the day. Some are both.
Are they solitary?
Part of the reason they're called monk seals is because they are generally solitary. They're more solitary than other pinnipeds, other seals. Many other species, most pinniped species, are very gregarious and very social. So if you're in California, for example, in San Francisco, Pier 39, right, you see hundreds, thousands of sea lions, right, all interacting, right?
Yeah.
Many are related to each other. And they're just boisterous, and they're all playing, and they're all... Monk seals, it's rare. You might see two on the beach. Generally, when you see a monk seal, you see one. And if you see more than one, they're generally not related. When Kaimana was weaned... there was a lot of this emotion circulating in the public, you know, how sad, you're separating the pup from the mom, and how does Rocky feel, and is she sad, and how does Kaimana feel, is she sad? You know, and the scientists will tell you the same thing, and I've actually observed it multiple times, and I'll give you a real-world example. So we were monitoring, PO2 was a seal born on the Mokes. And we were out there every day monitoring that mom and pup. And subsequently, when pup was weaned, we monitored the weaned pup. So they were, mom and pup were socializing for about 5 weeks, playing, nursing, interacting. One day, and I was lucky, I've only seen two pups actually get weaned. But I just happened to be there that day. And the mom went out with the pup, and they were just swimming around. And the pup got a little sidetracked and a little interested in something else, and the mom went the other way and just swam out towards Lanikai. And I saw her. I could see her head going above the water, and I saw her. And she looked back like once, and then she just kept on going. And the pup was oblivious. And then when the pup looked up, mom was gone. And the pup hauled out on the beach and just kind of laid there. And a week later, the mom was back on the same beach, and they didn't interact at all. Pup was over here, mom was over here. There was no interaction. It wasn't like, it's like they didn't even know each other.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. So it's one of the researchers at NOAA, I use her term, she describes it as, once the pup is weaned, the mom turns off the mom switch. She just switches off. I'm no longer the mom. Now she's off to be a wild animal again. And you'll see young animals. We have the situation on the North Shore right now with a newly weaned pup, and mom has been in the area, and they show up on the same beaches, but there's no, they don't socialize. They may be on the same beach. They may be within 5-10 feet of each other, but there's no, they're not playing, they're not vocalizing, they're not touching. There's none of this, like, you're my mom, oh my God, right? There's none of that. There's two seals, and they may look at each other, they may, you know, you would, our emotion says, go hug them, right? Go get you two together. Can't you tell that's mom? But it's almost like you turned the light switch off.
amazing.
Yeah, it's unlike other species, like, again, sea lions, elephant seals. Elephant seals, they live in these huge colonies, thousands of animals. Some species of dolphins, the pup may stay with the mom for 2 years, more, longer even, and they're socializing and hanging out together, and, you know, we think loving each other, right? Monk seals, it's like, boom, separate. So it's, you get to have to turn off, you have to kind of turn off that emotion, and we have to, I mean, yeah, just to be objective. The public doesn't know some of these facts, so they...
Oh, thanks for telling me that story, that example. You know, I could never have imagined that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they don't... You know, we have several young animals on the North Shore right now. Two, there's been situations where there's been the mom and then the son and then the next generation of the son, right? So... two brothers and the mom on the beach together. And the two young animals are playing with each other just because they're both young, but there's no interaction with the mom. The mom is just like...
Where do they mate?
In the water. They mate in the water. They give birth on land. It's only rarely been observed, though, in the water. It's rarely observed just because there's so few animals. Uh-huh. You have to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
But we see the evidence of it sometimes. Sometimes females will get what they call mobbing wounds on their back. And this is when more than one male attempts to mate with one female. So they mount the female from the back, and they grab with their mouth onto their back to mate. And so if you have multiple males trying to mate with a single female, she may get a wound on her back. And sometimes it looks pretty severe. In fact, we found a seal last October. We observed a seal way up in the northwest of Oahu near Makua. Had a huge wound, what we later realized was a mobbing wound. I mean, literally about a third of her back was gone.
Uh-huh.
All the skin on her back was gone.
So the female goes into heat, I guess you'd say, or estrus, and then at that point, males are attracted.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not similar to other pinnipeds. It's not uncommon for them to have multiple mates. And it's not known for sure if this occurs with Hawaiian monk seals, but with other pinnipeds, other similar pinnipeds, like harbor seals and other similar species, it's known that the females actually have delayed implantation. So they'll mate with multiple males, and they'll carry that sperm for up to 2-3 months. And something, no one really knows how the mechanism works, but somehow, some way, the female decides when she's going to be implanted, when she's going to implant the egg. And the theory is, scientists say the theory is that this is an evolutionary process where the strongest sperm survives to have the strongest offspring. So the female will wean her pup, she'll beef her weight back up, and then she'll start mating with multiple males. And somehow nature chooses which male will be the father, if you will. And no one really understands how the process works, but they know it occurs in other pinnipeds. And so this whole process between giving birth, nursing, weaning, getting your weight back up, and then molting, they usually molt right after that. They lose their top layer of skin once a year and all their fur. They molt. Yeah, most pinnipeds do. And so they molt once a year, and then they'll give birth about, so they give a birth from one pup to the next, they give birth about 13 months apart. Their actual gestation period is about 11 months. So there's that 2-month period where they're nursing, weaning, molting that they before they mate. So it's and this is an annual process. And some animals skip a year. Some animals skip 2 years. Some animals give birth pretty frequent, like every year. But it's no more frequent than 13 months. So if Kaimana, to your question about will Rocky give birth in Waikiki again? She certainly could. If she does, it will be most likely July, August of next year, because that's about 13 months from the last. So she gave birth at the very end, last day or two of June. So she'll give birth somewhere between the middle of July and the end of July.
And then she'll be, so pupping, weaning, plumping back up, molting, then again, estrus and getting fertilized.
11 months, yeah.
And then implantation.
Yeah. So it's about, I think it's exactly, someone said, I think it's 382 days to be exact. When the scientists are looking to estimate, they actually have a calendar and they say, here are the estimated dates for these animals.
Wow.
They actually give a date. And it's 382 days from the past. It doesn't always happen, but it's pretty darn close.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a busy year.
Yeah.
They got to stay on schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, NOAA, there's several NOAA scientists, in that team over there that study these animals. One of them, her name is Tracy. She's kind of Tracy and Stacy, they're kind of the population specialists of the group. And they're tracking these births, and they're tracking these dates. And they get really pretty close. They're like, it's going to be, if she's pregnant, because you never really know until right before, because they start looking pretty big. But
yeah.
Before that, you can't really tell, because they all kind of look big and blubbery, right? It's not until right before birth that they get really big. And sometimes you can actually almost see the animal inside them moving.
Wow.
Yeah, and then, but they're, sometimes they've been spot on, like June 16th, and then boom, June 16th, she gave birth, yeah. Sometimes they're off by a day or two, a week maybe. The trick is figuring out which animals are going to give birth at all, because again, many animals skip a year. Some skip multiple years. Some have been unable to give birth. They normally give birth in the main islands anytime after about their fifth year. They start giving birth. And then she skipped a couple of years. There's another kind of a grand dam on Oahu named Honey Girl. She's very well known.
Where is she hanging out?
She hangs out kind of the northeast corner of the island, like Haula, Kahuku area. She's had, I think, either the same number or 11 pups. But she's only missed a couple of years.
It was so funny watching Kaimana look like a sock and then just bulk up until she looked like a sea cucumber.
Yeah. And you can see there's all this caloric transfer going on between the mom and the pup. So I saw Rocky the very first day when she gave birth. She was huge. She was still massive.
Yeah.
She's a big girl to begin with, but she was just massive. She hadn't lost any of that pregnancy weight. And then you had this little pup next to her, tiny little thing. And over time, you see the calories transferring from one to the other. And so Rocky was getting thinner and thinner and thinner. Kaimana's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, more demanding, feed me, feed me, feed me. And the mom's like getting a little less, pushing away, right? And then it comes to a point, nature calls and says to Rocky in some way, you've given as much as you can. You need to preserve your own health now. And it's time for you to go back and start eating. Because during that period, she's not eating.
Oh.
Yeah, they don't eat during nursing. And that's different behavior than other pinnipeds, which can lead to problems. In California, for example, because of El Nino, it warms the ocean temperature, so the temperature on near shore waters gets hotter, so the fish stocks move to deeper water where it's cooler. So the pinnipeds, like seals, she may lose her way and not come back to the same spot, or the pup may move and they become separated. and the pups become abandoned. And so there's a lot of rescue work goes on there. That's not the behavior that monk seals exhibit. They're like, they're stuck to their pup, and they just stay there, and they stay there, and they stay there, and then you'll see them try to push the pup to be more independent, right? Let's go out swimming. Let's go out swimming, and start to push and move away from the animal so that that day comes where they just go away. And it's, the two times I've seen it, it's done. It's happened during playtime, during, like, exploration time. They go out, and the pup is getting more independent, so the pup is swimming over here, and the mom's over here, and they make them close, and then they might separate, and then, boom, the mom's gone. And we usually wait at least 24 hours, like in the case of Kaimana, we knew we were going to relocate her. And because sometimes the mom does come back, but just briefly. In this case, she didn't. When she left, she left. But I've seen other moms who they leave, and then they're back in 2 hours.
Mm.
But then the very next day, they're gone. It was kind of like a faux weaning, right?
Let's try this out.
Yeah. Yeah, so something triggered her to come back, but then the next day she's gone. But it's usually some situation where they're separated anyway. And there's rarely, sometimes you'll hear the pup vocalizing, like, where's mom? But it doesn't, it's not a prolonged thing. It doesn't go on for days and weeks. And
weeping or anything.
Yeah. No. It's usually, but at that stage of their development, when you hear pups vocalizing, it's usually, feed me, feed
oh,
me,
right.
feed me, right? It's not, I'm lonely, it's feed me, right? And they're not, that's really, that's all about, they just want to eat, and they'll be getting more aggressive. And sometimes they'll, you know, if the mom has weaned the pup, you'll see the pup, you know, like cuddling up to a rock or cuddling up to a coconut or cuddling up to a log, you know, because they're used to laying up against mom. Kaimana, it's funny, it's kind of a funny story. The very end of the Kaimana Beach, you have the Sans Souci, and you have that concrete stairway and that wall, right?
Right.
And they were seen together there all the time, leaning yeah. against that wall. Where she is now, on the north side of the island, there's a couple of places where there are concrete barriers. And we've seen her leaning up against those. Right? To her, maybe it's like, well, this feels like Kaimana Beach to me, right? Who knows? But it's weird because we haven't seen other animals do that. This particular animal has been seen nestling up to those concrete barriers. A few times.
Oh.
We photographed it. We've seen it. And she's just laying up again. And we haven't seen, again, there's other animals in the area. We haven't seen any other animal do it. So who knows what's going in that little mind.